Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening, we'll talk about the political situation in Zimbabwe. And joining us tonight is Mr. Dewa Mavinga. He's a Southern Africa Director for Human Rights Watch. He joins us by phone from Johannesburg. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mavinga.
Thank you so much, Douglas, for having me on the show. Thank you.
You're very much welcome. Also joining us is a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban, also in South Africa. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much, Douglas. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. So, gentlemen, tonight we're talking about the political situation in Zimbabwe. The main opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, is suing ZANU-PF party and the Electoral Commission over alleged fraud in the July 30th vote. And the court has just announced that they will hear the challenge in the election of President Emmerson Mnangagwa next week on August 22nd. Let me start with my friend, Mr. Mavinga. You were there during the elections. What's your general take?
Well, I think the elections went on, in terms of the voting day, on July 30. Fairly peaceful. There were some problems here and there in terms of intimidation of voters, especially in rural areas. And also the issue of using food aid to induce people to vote, particularly for the ruling ZANU-PF party. But it was fairly okay. The problem came when there was a perceived delay in the announcement of presidential results. And on the 1st of August, there were some protests in Harare, the capital, and then there was an excessive use of force response by the police and the military, who then used live ammunition to shoot at protesters and bystanders, killing in the process at least six people. And thereafter, there was a general crackdown on the leadership of the opposition MDC alliance and some civil society leaders. So this then foiled the entire electoral process, which the SADC and AU observers had declared free and fair and generally peaceful just the day before. And then Chamisa, Nelson Chamisa, the leader of the MDC alliance and the presidential candidate for the opposition, then rejected the results as fake and as fraudulent. When he tried to hold in a local hotel in Harare a press conference, heavily armed police crashed that press conference and tried to stop it for more than an hour. That was also quite a bad experience. But he then managed to successfully challenge the election and stop the inauguration of President-elect Emmerson Mnangagwa, whom was announced by the Electoral Commission as being the winner with a very narrow margin of 50.8% of the vote, which was just 0.8% over the required threshold of 50% plus one vote. So the Constitutional Court is now seized with the matter. President-elect Mnangagwa has replied to Chamisa's complaint and petition, and has actually, in some areas, conceded that there could have been errors in adding of the votes by ZEC, the Electoral Commission. But his argument, in part, is that the mistakes are not material enough to remove the 0.8% entirely, so the result should remain. Whereas Chamisa is saying the result should be set aside because of the errors in addition. Sometimes polling stations had more votes than registered voters at that polling station. So these kinds of challenges will be decided by the Constitutional Court on the 22nd of August. And a result should be handed down, a decision by the Constitutional Court, by the 24th of August. We will know whether Mnangagwa is confirmed, or the decision is set aside, or whether Chamisa, or there could be a runoff election which will then be held on the 8th of September.
I see. Suleiman, you just had Mr. Mavinga elaborate, give us a summary of what actually transpired. There are some who say this is the rule book on the African strongmen. They can see, because they attract, they are foreign observers, there's a sense of peacefulness at the beginning. Then they tamper with the results and then crack down on the opposition and break people's skulls, and then the whole thing, game is over. What do you think?
Precisely, Douglas. Regardless of the rhetoric, it was very, very, very clear. I think it was even on this program when we were discussing Ethiopia, when I think pointed out that President Mnangagwa was not sincere because there was nothing tangible apart from the rhetoric which was pointing towards a free, fair, and credible election. Free, fair, and credible elections are not delivered by rhetoric. They are actualized by necessary reforms. They are benchmarks which have to be fulfilled. Apart from that, the continent has not understood that once there has been a long-time dictatorship like that one in Zimbabwe, you cannot change quickly without making fundamental reforms within the system, because the system over years is built and perfected, meticulously perfected, to deliver only one regime in power. You find that from the bottom to the top, most of the institutions have been, by default, they have been set to produce a particular result. They have got so many levers. Even they can even change it on the last minute because the system is perfected. It takes them seconds to hold the relevant levers. They sometimes even reward. They can reward you somewhere and reward you somewhere, but they know which last lever they can take to change the result. For example, before I come back to Zimbabwe, look at Kenya, Douglas. After the system has been perfected to rig, they found it impossible to overrun the system, much as they tried. To the extent that when they discovered that the system might be defeated a little bit, Chris Mutsonda had to die, because he was the man in charge. So they know the levers where they have to touch. They had to clear him off. Mm-hmm. After that, then the system go back to where they were, and again, the same system. So in other words, the way you have said, this is the template in Africa. The system is, they are inherently made to rig. They are inherently made to return the system in power. The same was likely to happen in Zimbabwe, whether you like it or not. The Zimbabwe, Mr. Mnangagwa had made no change at all to show that he was really sincere. Or before I go, look at Ethiopia, what Dr. Bing has done to show that he's sincere. He made fundamental reform in the security system, in the political system. He changed the defense minister, he changed the police chief, he defended almost the senior civil servants, and then he showed that there was room for what? For change. But in Mnangagwa, how can you just replace the guards and then you expect that things will change? There was no difference between Mnangagwa and Mugabe. It was only a question of change of guards. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the systems were all still in place. Actually, you may find that even the very systems were created by Mnangagwa himself as one of the principal actors under Mugabe, taking that Mugabe was even aging more.
I see.
So how could you trust such a system to deliver results?
I see. Mr. Mavinga, to Suleiman's point there, how different, or was this election any different from previous elections under Robert Mugabe?
Yes, there was a difference in the sense that Emmerson Mnangagwa had promised that he would deliver a free and fair election, and he had actually tried to his credit to do that. And he had invited international observers for the first time in about 16 years from 46 countries and entities, including the UN, the EU, the African Union, FEDAC, the Commonwealth, the American groups like the Republican Institute, the NDI, all different groups and international media were there on the ground. They had unfettered access. And there was generally an environment of freeness. People could criticize, could do as they pleased. So going into the election, the environment was very good. But the problem was that of the concern about the role of the military. Remember that Zimbabwe had come from a military coup in November 2017 that removed Robert Mugabe. So the military had become entrenched in the politics and economics and the civil life of Zimbabwe. And that was the concern because of the previous issues around the use of violence. And also, of course, the use of food aid by government officials to ratchet up support for ZANU-PF and to threaten opposition supporters that if you do not vote for ZANU-PF, you will not get food aid. So we had incidences of intimidation across the country generally, but it was not open violence to a large extent. It only changed suddenly in the twinkling of an eye on the 1st of August when the military opened fire on unarmed protesters, killing at least six of them. And then that sent shivers and brought back the fear in the people of Zimbabwe. And this is what is obtaining as we speak.
I see. Talking of the military again in Zimbabwe, we all know they took power through what people call, some people call the soft coup. Suleiman, in what interest to them would it be to take power and then less than a year later just hand it over? Was that feasible?
Precisely, Douglas. Remember, during Mugabe, it is the same military which had declared that someone who was not part of the liberation struggle, not really Zimbabwe, when did they openly declare that now they have accepted? That is point number one. Point number two, as you said, their soft coup shows that they were in control. Moyo is in a certain position. General Chiwenga is actually in control. It shows you that it was the military ruling. Remember, it is not that Mnangagwa didn't know what to do. A delegation of United States congressmen had visited Zimbabwe. They had discussed with Mnangagwa and the civil society. But in their discussion with Mnangagwa, they had put it very clear of the fundamental reforms which were required. One of those was the reform which would make the military be subordinate to the civilian administration. Mm-hmm. Already now, the military, by being having the vice president and minister of foreign affairs here and there, it already shows that their influence was still intact. So after the delegation had gone, it won Mnangagwa. It told him the fundamental reforms which were required, the electoral reforms which were required, the discussion with the serious discussions with the opposition political parties which were required. So all these things have not taken place. So which means the military was still blocking any attempts because Mnangagwa had had discussion, they had advice. And by mouth, the rhetoric was showing that he has intention. But practically, he did nothing to make any reforms, which means, as you have said, he left the military in control, and the military were not ready to cede the power which they had taken for themselves.
Indeed,
we are vindicated by what happened thereafter. Up to today, they are in control.
I see. Mr. Mavinga, do you share the opinion that the military, there's no way they could hand over power that they just captured a short while ago?
And we had warned as Human Rights Watch and others that, look, the military would not do that. Why would they risk their lives in committing a crime of treason potentially if the coup had failed, only to hand over power 6 months down the line?
Yeah.
The coup was as a result of the army consolidating its active role in politics. And this is why it was going to be very difficult for the military to then step aside and allow for a democratic process, that would mean them losing power. And in fact, Douglas, there are tensions within the ruling establishment. It appears Mnangagwa may be pushing for a new dispensation, but there are some in the military and perhaps around General Chiwenga, his deputy, who may be thinking otherwise. So there are indications of tensions which are reflective of this contradiction of pushing for an open democratic dispensation on the back of a military coup.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, let me just reintroduce the program. For those who are just tuning in, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we are talking about the political situation in Zimbabwe. Our panelists are Dewa Mavinga, Southern Africa Director for Human Rights Watch, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Let me throw this one to both of you. Given that, given the Zimbabwe's court's historical leaning towards ZANU-PF, what are the chances that this challenge by the MDC would have any chance of success? Let me begin with the end of you can start.
Can I start?
You go ahead, Suleiman.
Okay, let me start.
Mm-hmm.
Douglas, first of all these dictatorships which have gone beyond the 10 years, after 10 years, the nation is a captured state. The institutions collapse. They are all skewed towards the dictator. After the removal of that dictator, unless he has been removed by popular revolt like in Burkina Faso and Egypt and Tunisia, if it is an internal one, you cannot simply remove it by just holding an election after he has been removed. You need a transition system, a transition period. Because every institution, you have to reform the institutions. You need to have some constitutional amendments, for example, to change the electoral system, the electoral
laws,
the electoral officials. You have to check like those ones. You have to find a way how you restrict the security interference, the media control, the whole environment. Number two, all the years they stay in power, the dictators batter, they scatter, they divide, and they destroy the opposition. The opposition itself becomes divided and destroyed. It needs a grace period to reorganize, to realign, to get semblance. If you just remove the dictator and hold the election, it means you have given away to the system which has been there, the way it happened in Gabon, the way it happened in Togo. After Nyasimbe's death, after Bongo's death, he ended up replacing him with a son and the other side with a son. You can't have a change. It is the same system which continues. Why? Because the system have continued. What has been happening on the continent is the template which you are talking about, whereby the judiciary is already compromised. When elections are held, it doesn't matter what results have come out. The cry is always the same. The template is still the same. The message is the same. No, if you are not satisfied, go to the courts of law and follow the law. You follow the law, where are you going? The judges are all part of the system. After that, they declare there is no substantial evidence to necessitate the nullification of results. Whether he has won by a margin, but they say the evidence is not substantial enough to warrant the nullification of results. So this is where we are going.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they have gone to court, we don't expect much because of the nature of the dictatorship and the system they have created.
I see. Mavinga, what's your point? Because this idea of substantiality has been tried, has been a known trick. Uganda has used it twice actually, where they say, well, there are flaws here and there, but they're not substantial enough to alter the final results. And secondly, your view on whether the judicial system there is capable of handling this challenge.
My sense is that we may be headed towards that particular view, which is that an admission, as already Mnangagwa has done in his responding affidavit, which has become public, that there were some problems in and errors in calculating, tallying, and adding the numbers, but they are not material enough to offset the legally required 50% plus one vote. I think this is where we are headed. And in terms of the judiciary, there it's unclear, Douglas, because these are judges who were almost all of them appointed by the former President Robert Mugabe. So they would likely be loyal to Mugabe, but I do not see them going all out to say, to declare, for example, that Nelson Chamisa, the opposition leader, is the winner. I think the best that could come out of this in terms of a decision might be to call for a runoff between the leading two leading candidates, which runoff would be held on the 8th of September, or perhaps just to say the mistakes will be corrected, but they cannot offset and change the ultimate result, which is that Emmerson Mnangagwa is the winner.
I see. Suleiman, how about the long arm of the army that holds the real power? Would they allow the is there a chance they could lean on the judiciary to decide one or the other?
The judiciary, Douglas, the way I've said is that after years of skewed administration and compromising, you find that it is still linked to the ruling party, because obviously we have known so many opposition leaders have been in and out of the judicial system, being victimized also. The judiciary has been singing the same song with the ruling party. So I don't expect a lot, the way my colleague has said, still the material facts will not be necessarily clarifying. The best we can expect, all of us holding our breath, will be a rerun, if it can happen. Mm-hmm. But even if the rerun happens the way you have said, the military is there, the coercion is still there, the same system is still there, people are being coerced, especially in the rural areas, they are being, dirty food for vote is still acting. Even the international observers have already noted it, that the same coercive system is still prevailing. The fear is still within the population, is still in the rural areas. So still, even if it is a rerun, the same system will be conducting elections, unless if they had given time and given a transitional period where they would refine many of the systems. Otherwise, as of now, we are expecting that the people's hopes have got to be dumped, though they had a little hope for a change.
I see. Mr. Mavinga, regardless of whatever comes out of the court, of the Constitutional Court, how do you see Zimbabwe moving forward? Should we expect any reforms by the Mnangagwa government, or maybe it's going to be same?
I think Zimbabwe is in a serious political crisis that is unlikely to be resolved immediately. Because, look, even if Mnangagwa is confirmed, he has got the narrowest of margins of victory, just over 50% as declared by the Electoral Commission, which means that the nation is divided, deeply divided. And even if, for example, Nelson Chamisa of the opposition is declared the winner, for example, what it means is that he will be a president with a parliament that is ZANU-PF two-thirds at least. That means that it is an unworkable arrangement in reality. And also, look, as my colleague has said, pointed out, that if it is a runoff, you have here the army ready to act. So it would further expose the true nature, the true colors of the Mnangagwa regime, in terms of they would then be forced to use the military, to use their monopoly over violence to defend and ensure that they do not lose political power. So whichever way we look at it, Zimbabwe remains in serious political crisis. What would be required now is some kind of mediation for the political leadership to find each other and find ways of healing the nation. But at the moment, I don't see that happening because the main protagonists are deeply, deeply antagonistic. And the Constitutional Court decision next week is unlikely to make a major difference.
I see. We are running out of time, gentlemen, but both of you, Suleiman first. How about this rule book of the international community where they may coerce the principals to form some coalition or government? Would that work?
At the moment, it is the only way forward. Because, as my colleague has said, you can see that the both options are difficult to carry on. Whether Chamisa is given government or Mnangagwa is given government, still there seems to be no way forward because the stakes are so high. Already, as far as Mnangagwa is concerned, already Zibera has been reactivated to show you that the international community doesn't have much confidence as such. That one already shows you that investment will be hard to come by when Zibera is on the way, which means that once there is uncertainty, then it will be very difficult to rebuild the economy. And once you don't rebuild the economy, the impasse will continue because you have a restless society, and you cannot build a country when you have got a restless society.
I see.
So there is still, unless, as you have said, there is some mediation and the government of national reconciliation is formed, and people are convinced to have a coalition government, which needs to be a transitional one,
mm-hmm.
which could help to push the country forward. Because remember, even Mandela had such a government
first,
to calm down the situation. Otherwise, apart from that, it is still a very tricky situation in Zimbabwe.
Mr. Mavinga, briefly, do you think that would work or that would be the solution?
That is a practical and workable solution to have some kind of coalition in a transitional fashion. But one of the problems because of these fights that are now happening, people are digging in on both sides. And the Mnangagwa side has now thrown in their unhappiness that former President Mugabe, on the eve of the elections, came out and said he would not vote for ZANU-PF, but would instead consider supporting Nelson Chamisa. So the guys who were responsible for the coup are saying Mugabe is being brought back by the back door. And that is a problem for them to have a coalition government. So they are saying, we are not prepared to have a coalition arrangement with anyone who brings back Mugabe. But really, in reality, this is the only way forward that could salvage and give Zimbabwe a fighting chance to rebuild.
I see. Well, gentlemen, I think we are running out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Dewa Mavinga, Southern African Human Rights Watch, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Cheers. Many thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome. Our producer, as usual, tonight was Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer was Audrius Regis. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, wishing you all the best.